Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Devon Insight's speaker seminar for November. This is Graham Flynn speaking, Chief Executive Officer of Devon Insight. I'm delighted today to be joined by Danielle Fletcher, who is a Community Development Officer for Guide Dogs, who will be talking about the mobility service called My Sighted Guide, which is provided by Guide Dogs, and giving us an overview of the services available through Guide Dogs. So, morning, Danny.
Good morning, Graham. Good morning.
Morning.
Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you.
I know we've got a number of people who are listening. Just wanted to say that what we're going to do is we will have a little conversation to start things off, to introduce the service, and then a little later we'll open up the line for people to ask questions. Is that okay with you, Danny?
That sounds great. Yeah, thanks, Graham.
Okay, so over to you. Tell us a little bit about Guide Dogs and My Sighted Guide in particular.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, good morning everyone else as well. Nice to have you on the call. Thanks for having me. So as Graham and Shusi, I'm Danielle Fletcher, or often go by Danny. I work within the My Sighted Guide team within Guide Dogs. So I thought I'd just start with a little bit of a background to Guide Dogs. So I'm sure many of you may have heard of the charity. So it all started in 1931, where two British pioneers, Muriel Cook and Rosamund Bond, organised the training of the first four British guide dogs, and that was in their garage in Merseyside. Since then, guide dogs have developed a range of services, as well as the fantastic guide dogs themselves. And so we're a charity that help people with sight loss live the life they choose. That's the kind of the tagline we sort of use, and that's what it's mainly all about, and that's providing mobility for blind and partially sighted people. Charity also supports research, raising awareness, lots of campaigns, and provides a wide range of services for the visually impaired. And this can be from information and advice, life skills with our vision rehabilitation specialist, tech and sensory grants for children and young people, including child accommodation specialists who work with families and young people directly, buddy dogs, and also then what I'm talking a little bit more about today is the My Sighted Guide service. So I kind of wanted to start. Oh, sorry, go on, Graham, go ahead.
Go on, that's absolutely great. So I think it's important for people to get an understanding that Guide Dogs isn't just about guide dogs. There are a whole range of services. And quite often we will advise people to and refer people into guide dogs, and they think, well, I don't want a dog, I want something else. And this whole issue of mobility is really important.
Absolutely.
Just talk a little bit more about the range of services.
Yeah, for sure. And exactly that that point you made there, Graham, I think we're really, really keen as a charity to really make that known now that there's such a range of services. And part of my role as a community development officer is really getting that out there because there's such a wide range. Exactly the point you said is we don't want people to think they shouldn't call just because they don't want a dog. There's so much other support that is available. For example, there is a role within Guide Dogs that is a vision rehabilitation specialist. I think they are similar to some of the roles that the County Council might have as well, but they essentially help anybody with sight loss with life skills. So that can be anything from getting out and about with cane training. It can be even support in their own home with cooking and all those things that we know that with sight it's a lot easier, but those things with sight loss can be a little bit more difficult. So they support, really people person-centred, so they support the person with sight loss in kind of whatever sort of queries they need, and that can include tech support as well with sort of mobile phones and things like that. So that's one side of the support. There's lots of different volunteer roles within the charity as well, where if you're interested in volunteering, there's lots of things to get involved with, including events, fundraising. We have drivers. There's campaigners as well. And then another big part of it, other than the My Sighted Guide service, is are the child accommodation specialists that we mentioned as well. So they are a role that I think involves a sort of two-year university degree to be trained in. It then is a very specialist support for children and young people that have sight loss. As you can imagine, if you think back to the school days, a lot of our education is very visual-based, and a lot of learning is very using your eyes and think on the whiteboard and things like that. So the child habilitation specialist works for the child, the young person, and the family and the schools to make all those adaptions along the way, including even just that walk to school, so that they feel safe, they're confident, and they know what they do, so that they can use those skills later in life as well. And I'll just add in there and mention our guidelines. So we have an advice line that is available, and that's the first port of call for just sort of any queries at all. They can provide good advice on the phone, and if it's something they can't answer immediately, they'll pass on to an expert within Guide Dogs that can make that call back and try and answer those questions, whatever that person has. So lots and lots of different services there that Guide Dogs has. I would say if you have a query, you're not sure, it's worth giving us a call and just seeing if there's any support we can give.
That's great. So let's talk about Sighted Guide. I joined Devon and Sight 9 years ago, and within I think 2 weeks, the first thing I did was go on a Sighted Guide course, and I found it hugely, hugely beneficial. And that course has changed and developed over the years. It's now called My Sighted Guide. Could you give us an overview of that particular service?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, great to hear. You did some training early on there, Graham. That's fab. So the My Sighted Guide service, I think it's been running around 10 years now, maybe a little bit more, out of Guide Dogs anyway. So the purpose of the My Sighted Guide service is to reduce sort of isolation, help build mobility and confidence and independence for people with sight loss. So the service itself aims to match a trained and qualified sighted guide volunteer to assist in enabling the visually impaired person to leave the house by way of providing that sighted guiding assistance. So kind of essentially sort of their eyes and also a little bit of confidence to be able to leave the house. And this is usually on-arm guiding where the visually impaired person uses the arm of the guide to be guided safely outside. I'm just going to quickly add in here, Graham, if it's all right, is a lot of people then ask why a sighted guide instead of a guide dog, obviously with guide dogs being all about guide dogs, the dogs themselves. It may be that some people don't actually want a dog. They might not like dogs, might not need a dog particularly. It may be they're not in a position to look after or care for a dog, depending on sort of perhaps whether they have a garden, the size of the place they live, perhaps their own health needs. It may be impractical for them. And some people may be allergic as well. So that's just sort of where the volunteer service, the My Sighted Guide service, does come in. It's We like to call it the two-legged support instead of the four-legged support. So that's where they can come and visit the person with sight loss. Usually it's agreed whether they go out once a week, once every 2 weeks. It's very flexible depending on the two people involved. It's all about mobility. And obviously, naturally, they'll make a connection as well. And we have partnerships that have lasted years, and they've become great friends because of it. And they start off by wanting to sort of try and achieve some goals that the person with sight loss may want to achieve. And this could be as much as improving fitness. They're going out for, you know, an hour's walk, a half an hour walk, 20-minute walk, which could be more than they were doing before. Building a bit of confidence to get outside the house. It could be that they want to practice some of those routes. And even they might want to access more of a sort of the services and the facilities within their town or community that they may not feel as confident or have been able to do. There might be a great cafe around the corner that actually they sort of need a little bit of support just to get to initially, and they can do that with a volunteer in the service.
Danny, how has COVID affected this service?
That's a great question, Graham. And as I suppose you can imagine, and I imagine for your charity as well, it has been quite a big impact, sadly. Everything was put on pause for, if we all remember back in 2020, everything went on pause, I suppose, didn't it? So things did go on pause, sadly, for a little while. So we had, what happened there was we paused recruitment for volunteers because, of course, we wanted to keep everybody as safe as possible. We didn't necessarily want encouraging people to go and see people when it didn't feel safe and things like that. So the pause recruitment of the volunteers, this did mean that sort of the waiting list for people with sight loss service users continued, and people could still apply to the service during that time. So where we're at the moment is we do have a waiting lists in a few of our sort of areas and regions, and we're just really trying to get back up to that level of volunteer recruitment that we were pre-COVID. And again, I don't know if you found the same within your charity, but it's proving a little difficult. There are, you know, I think we're getting there, but volunteers are sort of slightly harder to come by at the moment. And I think everyone's just post-COVID trying to figure out their own priorities and enjoying life and things. So I think sadly, yeah. Graham, it has slowed the service a little, but we are working very hard to get it back up to scratch. And there are still partnerships in existence. We are still making those matches with volunteers, but it's just a little slower, I'd say. And to be honest, I think.
So I'm thinking back to when I did my training, and it was a long time ago now, but we make it one of the requirements that every new member of staff has to partake in the training. So do you still offer the service where you train family members to support a visually impaired person with guiding?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So we do offer what we call our friends and family training. And I think this is something that did continue through COVID, but what we did, I guess, like a lot of things, it went online. So it's not as practical as perhaps what you had, Graham, and what we can do, but it still gives a lot of advice and tips to people. But yes, this absolutely is still something we offer. So this is where it's a free training and enables the friends and family to acquire skills to guide safely. So it goes through tips on how to support best. I think a little bit around the communication and how important that can be. And if we are offering those sessions in person now, and that's where we will sort of visit in person, whether it's a neutral place or we'll come to the person's house, and we'll go through those sighted guiding techniques, which the main priority of that is to be able to do it safely. So it's about sort of most safe place to hold the person. So usually that's on the arm. We often use the C grip, which is just above the elbow. We also show different techniques. It sounds sort of almost trivial, but actually things like going through a narrow space, guiding someone to either touch something or to sit down. Obviously it's not telling them how to sit down at all, it's guiding them to the chair. But it's all these techniques that kind of sort of empowers the person with sight loss and enables them to do it themselves rather than, I suppose, telling them what to do or doing it in a certain way for them. That's really the priority of the sighted guide training generally, but also for the friends and family, just to kind of help with more tips in that situation and to answer any questions that they may have specifically within their families and friends.
I think one of the difficult things for friends and family is understanding what their loved one is going through with their sight loss, and also understanding the effect that the sight loss is having on them in particular. So the majority of our clients have age-related macular degeneration, which means that they have central vision loss. And trying to explain that to somebody can be quite difficult. So I seem to remember that we used simulation spectacles, we used blindfolds, we did all sorts of things which made people a little bit more aware of what their loved one was going through. Does that still happen on the training?
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Graham. Yeah. So again, it's something when we do the volunteer training, when myself, I go out to train different organisations as well, and including in the friends and family training, we add elements to our training that I think the best way to put it is to allow the person to step in the shoes of somebody with sight loss. So we have these things, like you mentioned, Graham, called simulation specs, where they're essentially, if you remember back to sort of old science lessons when you had the protective science goggles, something like that, sort of a pair of glasses that simulate certain eye conditions. So it might be the glasses have, if it simulates macular degeneration, it might have the central vision blocked out. It might be if they're simulating cataracts and it makes it look a bit cloudy. So we encourage our people when we do the training to wear these, have a little sort of walk around with them. We even sometimes do activities as well, something as simple as pouring a glass of water in a glass when you have central vision. That can, I'm sure as many people will know on this call, is something that's not as straightforward as it sounds. There's a lot of element of our training, including talking about lots of different eye conditions as well, where we really encourage people to empathise and step in the shoes And we also sort of, there are other activities we run, and we ask people to think about the emotional consequences of this, of the impact of the sight loss and on those day-to-day tasks. And the feedback of their training is that that really does help people begin that empathy process and start thinking about the person with sight loss. So we think it's a great element of the training as well as the guiding technique. So yeah, thank you for mentioning that, Graham. That's a really good point.
Uh-huh. When we talk about guiding techniques, I think the thing is it's about the practical application, isn't it? So how you walk through a door, how you go up a flight of stairs, how you put somebody in a car. Simple techniques, you know, how you open a car door, get somebody in, protecting their head so they don't bang their head getting into a car. It sounds really, really simple, but actually what it does is it leads to confidence. And it leads to confidence for you as a guiding volunteer, but also confidence in your loved one has in you.
Absolutely.
I'm going to share with you a story. So I did the training in 2013. And pretty soon after that, I ended up going to a national conference in London. At the end of the conference, I was talking to one of the speakers. And he said, oh, where are you going now? And I said, I'm going to Paddington, back to Devon. And he said, oh, could you guide me to the train? It was my first guiding experience was in central London during the rush hour on the tube and going to Paddington. But I've got to be honest and say that it's like all training, isn't it? If it's there and in the back of your head, you suddenly slotted into it. And I just thought, this was wonderful because you just followed the training and talked about what you were doing, and you know there's lots of stairs and escalators on the railway network, and simply counting the steps, and you know communication, I suppose, is the biggest thing. The communication between you as the guider and your loved one. And I suppose from that day onwards I thought, well, crikey, if I can guide somebody through rush hour London, I should be all right in Devon.
You can do it anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. So where is the service run in the country?
Yeah, great question. Well, first of all, Glenn, that sounds like quite the first experience. So congratulations for doing that. But and great to hear that you did find that the training was supportive. And I think that's exactly it. Maybe it's a bit like first aid or something. When you've had it, the knowledge is there, isn't it? And when you can draw on it, it just helps with the confidence of just being able to do it. And at the end of the day, just communicating with the person you're with is all you can do as well. That's one of the key parts of the training indeed. In terms of where we run in the country, I'm based in the southwest. My office base is actually Bristol, but the service itself runs all throughout the UK. So that's Scotland, England, Wales and Northern Ireland as well. So just like the guide dog service and the sort of offering of where dogs are available, the My Sighted Guide service is available in the same parts across the country. We are then sort of divided into these regional teams. So yeah, like I say, we're Southwest, we have Midlands, Southeast, etc. And we have a dedicated team that are available for those counties within that region.
How does somebody sign up to be a volunteer? So if somebody wants to guide people and enter the volunteer scheme, how does that happen?
Yeah, absolutely. So similar to how you might want to sign up for the service as well, our guideline is our one-stop shop for it, really. So you can make a call or drop an email to them, and they can put you in touch with your regional volunteer experience officer, who will start the process for you and sort of explain the rest of the bits and pieces that you need to do. So there's that as one option. Would you like me to give you the number for our guideline now, Graham? I can read it out loud if anybody's ready. Okay, so yeah, the guideline number is 0800 781 1444. So that's 1444. That's a guideline number, and there is also an email address, which is simply information@guidedogs.org.uk. That is one method, just if you want to start the contact that way. Another way, Graham, is if you go to our website and click on the volunteering tab, there's an area on the website where you can put in your postcode, and it will show the volunteering roles, so that's any volunteering roles that are available in your area. And now I know we're across the country, I know we're looking for My Sighted Guide volunteers, so that will always come up. But that is one option as well. You can either make a call, do an email, or go to the website and inquire via the web that way.
Okay, we'll give all those contact details again at the end of the talk.
Yes, sure.
So we've talked about recruiting volunteers. What about somebody who's got a visual impairment and wants to try and sign up for the My Sighted Guide service? How do they just contact you through the same numbers?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So the guideline again is what guideline do and what's fantastic is if you are somebody who is looking for the service and you do have sight loss yourself, they will take you through, they'll sort of have a conversation with you, a very person-centered conversation with you when you first call up. And they can signpost you to the service, and they can put you in touch with the partnership officer, so the My Sighted Guide service for your particular region. But what they'll also do within that is they'll ask quite a few questions to essentially find out if there's any other needs that you may have. It might be that you've called up because you're like, oh, I've heard of the My Sighted Guide service. I'd really like to have a look at this, find out more, have a volunteer. But in that conversation, it might also come out that, I don't know, you've had a little bit of a trouble with your mobile phone at the moment. You need a bit of tech support. And if that information comes out, the guideline can also put you in touch with the correct staff member to provide support for that as well. So I'd certainly recommend, if it's interesting, the My Sighted Guide service, or you have any questions generally, if guideline, they'll ask lots of different questions to try and identify your specific needs and what else you may need to support you.
Could someone have My Sighted Guide if they have a guide dog?
Yeah, that's right. So they can indeed. Obviously the guide dogs are as a mobility service. It might be that you've learned lots of specific routes with the dog. But it might also be that there are different places you want to go to. I mean, the dogs are fantastic and they know routes. But if a new cafe has arrived or a new cinema has arrived in your town, they're not going to automatically sort of know where that is. And it might be that, unfortunately, they are amazing, but that's not quite what...
they're not that amazing.
I didn't have the sixth sense. Yeah, exactly, yeah. So it might be that My Sighted Guide can help you achieve those things and getting to new places as well. And it might be, as comforting and as amazing company dogs are, it might be that... still feel a little bit isolated and you do still want a bit more human company. So absolutely, if you have a guide dog, you can apply to My Sighted Guide service as well. And our training for the volunteers does include how to guide someone with a guide dog. And, the first point of that would be guiding them on the other side of the dog, and the dog won't be in harness at that point. So it is certainly an option. I think maybe the one thing I'd add in there is that at the moment, whilst we have sort of waiting lists for people wanting the service, it may be that we sort of shift priorities to those that are more in need at this certain time. So absolutely you can apply to the service if you have a guide dog, but I think it's just adding the caveat that there may be some wait time at the moment while we prioritise need as well.
I think that's something in common with all service providers just across the sector. I mean, all support services, whether that be health, social care, the voluntary sector. We have, we're working on a reduced staff team at the moment. We have had a massive increase in the number of calls. And you're having to prioritise things. And, obviously, we always prioritise the most serious things. And, some people are in massive crisis and not very well at all. I think people do understand that things are prioritised. I'm just mindful of the fact that we've gone through COVID, which... I'm sort of slightly concerned that people seem to be forgetting that COVID is there in our society still. And in our office, we've got two members of staff. We've got one who's off work at the moment with COVID. We've got another who's just recovered from COVID. And that was after 2.5 years of us being completely COVID-free. And we're all vaccinated, all that sort of thing. So the impact on staff teams continues now. And yeah, we have a rule here that if you're ill, whether it be with cold or flu or whatever, that you're off work, because it can disable a staff team very quickly. And you know, one of the things I think is really important is that is about looking after the carers, and I mean that charity workers too. COVID has had a massive impact on services, but also on staff teams trying to help people. So I really empathise with you and waiting lists, because we're in the same sort of situation.
Yeah, thank you, Graham. Yeah, we're also very aware of the charities and things are going through the same things at the moment. So I hope your staff members get well soon as well.
Let's just think about another group of people, and that's, again, this comes out of COVID as well. So naturally with sight loss, there's anxiety about going out and about. There are people who maybe use a long cane. Can you use a long cane and also have a sighted guide?
Yeah, that's correct as well. Yeah, so similar to a guide dog, a long cane is a mobility aid, as there may be people on the call that use them, and they are great in providing that confidence in going out. But again, for the same things of the guide dog, is there might be those different areas that your vision is currently preventing you from having the confidence to get to, or whichever other reason. So absolutely, if you're a long cane user, you can absolutely have a MySight guide. We again go through the techniques with the volunteer of how to support the person if they use a long cane and they want to continue to, or often what we actually recommend is that the person would fold up their long cane, because they have a MySighted guide who essentially is acting as their eyes, and they can provide the guiding and the direction safely, so that's no problem there at all.
Do you use public transport at all?
As the service, do you mean?
Yeah,
so it's absolutely kind of up to the volunteer and the person with sight loss when they're in their partnership. So it could be, the volunteer can also drive if that's what they've agreed and they want to go further afield. But yes, absolutely, if it's they live in a town and actually they need to get a bus over to go to the cinema or go to that shop they wanted to go to, they can get that public transport together. And what we say is guide dogs will cover the expenses for the volunteers' journey, and so if they wanted to do that, they will cover the expense for the volunteer in that situation.
Okay. So from an organisational point of view, so say I'm providing a public service, I don't know, I'm a zoo or safari park or somewhere where the public come in and have a reception area or thing, is it something that you can go into an organisation and train people in sighted guiding techniques?
Yes, absolutely. So it's a relatively new thing that is become part of the My Sighted Guide service. So that's actually where my role comes in. So I'm the Community Development Officer, and a new thing that guide dogs have started, and it's all about promoting accessibility and trying to get those sighted guiding techniques out there more and more, because we think it's so, so valuable for everybody to know about. We think if it was seen as first aid and people had, did a little bit in school or did little courses here and there, we think it'd be fantastic. So, yeah, as part of my role, we're offering out sighted guiding training to organisations, businesses, charities, anybody that might be interested, or places of interest like zoos or museums, like you mentioned, Graham. And it's what we do is we do a 3-hour training session with them that goes through a lot of the things that we have mentioned about the MySight Guide training. So it'd be the kind of barriers to independence, it would be the emotional consequences of sight loss to get that empathy going again. It will be a little bit about eye conditions, and then we'll take them through the actual sight guiding techniques and do that practical tips with them so that they have the confidence to use them. And then that then hopefully in turn, whenever there might be someone with sight loss visit that place, they have staff on hand to be able to support them. And I think that's the fundamental part of that is just to increase that accessibility awareness and make places more accessible for people with sight loss, so that if they know they can get on the bus by themselves and get to, let's say, John Lewis, and because John Lewis' staff have sighted guide training, then they can, it just helps their confidence in going there. So that's the kind of premise behind it. So previously, I've been down to Dartmoor Zoo. There's been a farm down in Hampshire that wants to do training. We've got Jungle Earth coming up in Bristol, hopefully. And we're also, I think in your area in Devon, there's an organisation called Devon Community Together who we're going to train shortly as well. So yeah, it's a new branch, and I just think it's fantastic that more and more people are looking to become aware and sort of trained in sighted guiding.
I just think it's really important that people have these little skills, which is about being kind to people. One of the nice things about the sighted guide training is that you're sort of, you've got that armory of skills. And if you see somebody with a cane or with a VIP badge or something, and they're waiting to cross the road or, I don't know, looking a bit lost in a reception area of a health centre or something, it gives you the confidence just to approach them and say, look, I'm a sighted guide, can I help you in some way? And even if the person says, no, I'm fine, that's fine. But you've made that offer, and I think that's something really, really important. Now, before we open up to questions, I'd just like to, it would be remiss of us not to talk a little bit about guide dogs. Could you just talk a little bit about the guide dog service and, in particular, the criteria for getting a dog?
Yeah, for sure. So, yes, of course, guide dogs being a big part of the charity and where it all started, indeed. So, again, a similar thing to what we mentioned about the My Sighted Guide service. With if you're interested in a guide dog, the first port of call there is to call the guideline and let them know that you're interested. They'll then probably ask several questions around your current situation, perhaps your eye condition, lots of different things to kind of gather some information to pass on to the guide dogs team. So there is some criteria points there, and that is all kind of it's taken through with the guide dog team. So once you've called that guideline, the guide dog team, or sort of the more the dog training staff is what we call them, is they'll arrange a visit with you, tell you about sort of the services and the training options to you, and they'll also complete a health risk assessment. So a big part of it is to, I think a big criteria point is that you sort of have to be healthy and in good, have reasonable mobility yourself so that you are able to look after the guide dog. Of course, like we say, the guide dog is fantastic, but at the end of the day, it is still a dog, and you do still have to be able to take care of it in those ways. And they'll go through different things, like how well you can confidently move around inside and outside yourself, what mobility aid you currently use, and any other training services you might currently be accessing, and if that might help. If it is that you're... go on, Graham.
No, I was just going to ask, is there a sort of medical requirement for a certain level of sight loss? So I'm wondering, does the person have to be registered as severely visually impaired? Is there a diagnosis or registration that somebody must have before you'll look at them?
So to my knowledge, so I have to admit it's not my area of expertise, but I think it will be looked at on a case-by-case situation. I don't believe that there's a specific criteria or diagnosis you will need, like you mentioned there, Graham. But so we can't definitely say either way. So it's until you've completed the assessment with us, because we look at so many different factors about whether you can have a dog. So even if you're partially blind or you have a slight amount of visual impairment, for example, and you're interested in a dog, it's definitely worth asking the question, because don't rule yourself out if you feel that you're not eligible, for example. I think just ask the question is the best way to say it.
I was listening to Jeremy Vine the other day, and it became quite a negative story about waiting times for guide dogs, and in particular people who had already got a guide dog, their dog was retiring, and the wait to get a replacement. It's unfortunate, but it's a fact of life, isn't it? And I just wondered if you had anything to say about waiting times for guide dogs.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so it's sad to hear, and unfortunately that is a situation. I think, again, like we said, post-COVID, things had to go on hold. So unfortunately that has had an impact on the dog side of things as well. So I think during COVID they had to pause the breeding program, for example, because we couldn't train the dogs in the same way. They couldn't have their fosterers and their puppy raisers in the same way. And that in turn, unfortunately, has impacted on the wait time. So again, similar to the My Sighted Guide service, I think our waiting lists are longer than usual, and therefore the wait time is longer than usual. But everything is getting back up to speed, like sort of as much as possible. I believe we're actually doing, there's been a lot of recruitment with our guide dog trainers as well. So we're trying to get those more staff in to get the dogs trained and obviously get the dogs out. But absolutely, to set expectations there, Graham, you're very right in that there are waiting times. But if you are interested in a guide dog, don't let it put you off. I think just... It just comes with the precedent that there may be some time to wait. And then I think, like there, you mentioned retired guide dogs as well. Those people that then want a dog afterwards, the retired dog, they will sort of enter the same, or not necessarily the same, but they will enter a waiting list again so that the appropriate dog comes back up to them, available for them. And again, it's all an assessment on individual needs. And like you mentioned earlier, again, it's prioritising on the largest or the most need there.
Absolutely. And it's a massively expensive service too, isn't it? I can't remember. I think the figure is about £50,000 or something to train a guide dog.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that is incredibly expensive. Well, look, we know, I know that we've got some guide dog users in our client bank. I know that there are other people on the call, so I'm going to open up the call now to our clients. So has anybody got a question today for Danny? Don't be shy.
Very shy.
It's Sylvia here. I was,
hello, Sylvia.
I was fortunate enough about 25 years ago to be able to go and watch and visit one of your training centres. I think it was up near the Aylesbury area. I was living in Oxfordshire at the time. It wasn't too far away. And I was amazed at the amount of detailed work that is put in to teaching these how to react. I thought it was absolutely marvellous. And then we always backed guide dogs. And we always played in the golf tournament at Wentworth every year, which used to remove quite a lot of money from our purse on the way through.
But, I can imagine.
So I've always been interested in it. And I just appreciated, when I didn't know that I was going to have a bit of a problem, appreciated the extreme carefulness that is by those that train these animals and then help the person to be able to find it as a friend as well as a guide dog. I think it's marvellous work.
Oh, thank you very much, Sylvia. Thanks for sharing as well. I think our National Breeding Centre is now in Leamington. But yeah, you're absolutely right. The dedication that the staff give to them, the length of the training, the amount of detail that goes into it, it is fantastic, and it's amazing to see the dogs. I mean, when I often go into the office where I'm based in Bristol, and all the training sort of lot happens within there, and you know, they just sort of do laps of the corridors just to get these certain techniques, and the waiting before going up the stairs and through the doors, and it is a marvel to see, I have to say. So I really do agree with you there, Sylvia, and yeah, thanks for sharing your experience.
A friend of mine in the village, they were puppy trainers. I can remember going to them one day and they said, Sylvia, now we're going to be trying to teach the puppy to stay on the floor. So we all sat down and ate our tea on the floor. So they were just and there were several friends that I knew that did train these little puppies when they were quite small. It was amazing.
Yeah, that's right. That's part of the journey I haven't necessarily mentioned as well, so thank you. So they come from our sort of national breeding centre, the puppies or the dogs, where I suppose they're carefully selected which ones are breeded. But for the first sort of year to 18 months of their life, they live with what we call puppy raisers now, where these are volunteers who look after the puppies during that time. They'll help along with the training in those early years. And the main aim is also to get them sort of as socialised as much as possible, seeing people, perhaps having dinner on the floor with the friends like you did, just various bits and pieces like that before they then go into their main training, which is just wonderful. And always looking for volunteers for that role as well, just to add in as well, if anybody likes the idea of an energetic puppy.
Hello. Maybe that wouldn't be much.
Right, we've got another question there. Go ahead, caller.
Hello, it's Karen here. Hi.
Hi, Karen.
I have a question about the age of the applicant. So many of us sort of get our diagnosis of losing our vision, etc., as we get older. And I wondered whether there's an age limit for applicants applying to have a guide dog.
That's a great question. Thank you, Karen. So what I'd say there is there isn't a definitive limit whatsoever. And I think exactly what you just said, we're very aware with, I think there's a statistic, easy for me to say, that is, eye conditions, the amount of eye conditions increase sort of. Unfortunately, the older you get, it's something that is more common in older people, sadly. So because of that reason, exactly, we know that there's so many people out there that may be of an older age that need support. So there isn't a definite criteria or age limit, sorry. But with guide dogs and the My Sighted Guide service, what we say we're person-centred, so what that means is somebody will come out to meet you, have that conversation and ask those questions and assess your individual ability and whether you can have a guide dog or whether you can sort of walk far enough to have a My Sighted Guide volunteer as well. So really, really is person to person. It may be somebody who is the same age. One person can still walk 5 miles, but the other person can barely leave the house. So that's why we don't say there's specific limits. Does that answer your question okay?
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
No problem.
I think we need to be really realistic about the amount of work it is to have a healthy dog. I've got a 2-year-old Labrador, and we walked over Dartmoor for 2 hours on Sunday in the rain. And I got home, and she was still tearing around the house like a loon. They're full of energy, and I suppose we're talking about the welfare of the animal as well as the client. I'm just thinking here that we assessing people is really, really hard. And what we tend to do is we do not have very strict criteria except for one particular aspect of our work, and that's access to counselling. And that's based on science. I think like you, you're actually looking at each person in a holistic way. And whether they can support the dog in a good way, exercise it, because you've still got to exercise the dog or have somebody able to do that for you.
Absolutely. So good point, Graham. We absolutely look at the person in a holistic way, look at all of the factors involved in their life, and we'll make that decision according to that person. Yeah, and definitely correct in terms of if you're to have a guide dog. And that will form part of the criteria, in fairness, that there'll be questions asked about sort of the ability to still look after the dog, in terms of exercise, in terms of regular feeding and its general living condition. So it's all of that that does factor into it and what happens during that assessment as well.
I'm wondering whether any of our callers today can share with us their experiences of family and friends understanding their sight loss, whether people have had any difficulty with that, whether there's been any friction within family or friends or peer group. Can anybody comment on that?
strange, sort of out of the blue question, but I have a son and a daughter. It's Karen again. And my son is kind of quite caring. My daughter is caring in a practical way and seems to veer away from emotional connection over my diagnosis. I think it's because it's just too much for her to cope with. I've spoken to other people with what's going on with her life and everything, this is just an added thing. And they both get very, very, they both really want me to, you know, learn about technology and get it, you know, get the technology and get the information and be able to sort of have these skills to a point where they can get really, really frustrated with me because it's been a slow journey for which I'm so grateful to, you know, our chit-chat group and all the help I've got. But yes, it's very much that they want to see me okay, and they're very worried that I'm going to get isolated. I think that's the big fear they have. Does anybody else gel with that?
So Karen, the reason I asked the question is because it may seem strange to ask questions like that at the beginning, but what it does is it opens up the debate, because what we find is an awful lot of people, the reason they enjoy our services is because they have the opportunity to share with us some of the difficulties they're having at home that they can't talk to family and friends about.
Yes.
So the Sighted Guide service can give us a way of introducing that experiential work with the simulation spectacles, because that's the first time that sometimes people realize what their mum or grandmother is going through or partner. And, you know, quite often we'll get people who will say to us, my mum is a pain in the arse. And you go, oh, right, okay. Yeah, my mum's a pain in the arse. She tells me she's got sight loss. She can't walk down the street, but she can sit in her chair and read a book. And you go, oh, well, that's because she's got a light next to her. She can position the book in a certain way. She's learned where she's got usable sight. But when it comes to navigating down a pavement, she's got age-related macular degeneration, and she can't see clearly in front of her. And that's why she's so dependent. So the reason we ask these questions is to tease out those sorts of problems, because it can be a source of frustration. It can really be a source of frustration. I've got it. I'll share with you at the moment. I've got a mother who's got early onset dementia at the moment, and I can't tell you how frustrating it is. And you're trying to be caring and loving, and you get everything thrown back in your face. It's a similar thing with sight loss, and sometimes it can be an area of friction. So the Sighted Guide service can be a way of making people aware of what their loved one is living with. So that's why we sort of introduced these sorts of topics.
Can I make a point?
Les, hello.
Morning to everybody. I just wanted to make a quick point, because the conversation is going to a point that dawned on me when I worked in the NHS, non-medical. And the point I wanted to make was, I think, for me, this begins at school. It begins in education, not necessarily at primary, but maybe secondary level. If the government is demanding to keep people off the unemployment list by leaving our children in school for a longer period of time, it seems obvious to me that they could develop some system of volunteering or obligating students at the latter part, maybe sixth or seventh year of education, to do voluntary work, or at least it be in attendance for, say, a four-week period, non-medical, where they shadow somebody, perhaps in a care home, perhaps in a hospital, which is the particular environment I was in. Because what shocked me was, because a lot of people that go into hospitals to visit people, loved ones, people they care for, or even to be in hospital, either goes into denial or shock because we're brought up to assume that everybody is healthy, white, middle class, wealthy, and that we go along in this sort of stream, and then suddenly when it stops, the world stops for people. And not only does it stop for them if it affects them personally, but to have the loved ones around them suddenly change and their life needs shift, which requires, if you like, shifts and change on behalf of loved ones, when they actually find it difficult to accept the fact that as humans we are frail and we are sometimes subject to defect along the way in one way or another. And that for me seems absolutely ludicrous, that that isn't actually looked at and catered for or visited and educated at a point when people are at school, when they could actually get, say, additional points for graduation or something like that. And it seems really silly to me that the economy demands that, if you like, and doesn't provide for that facility, as you couldn't deny the fact that we lose certain faculties and certain efficiencies as we get older.
I don't think we're particularly kind as you get off your soapbox. Les, I think that's a really good observation, and I wonder how kind we are as a nation to elderly and vulnerable and disabled people in this country. I look at a lot of Asian countries and they're very much more supportive of elderly. I don't know, but it's a very interesting observation.
Mm-hmm.
Has anybody else got a question?
Yeah, I think we're quite kind. I think it's just that when someone in your family who's close to you, you know, has this diagnosis, I think it brings up an immense fear for the loved ones around you. You know, I think my daughter's going through real fear about my future, about what's going to happen to me. And I think that just, it does personally, you know, what questions it will bring up is, how can I cope with this? I'm kind of imputing this on her, but I've got a feeling that that's there. And she's worked, you know, she works with autistic children, she works with vulnerable elderly people, so she's been around caring work for many years and also counselling. But I think when it's immediate, when it's with someone of your own family, someone who's a loved person, then it does bring up, you know, a sense of fear and also a sense of you know, inadequacy to deal with the situation, powerlessness in a way. They can't change the diagnosis, and which is really strange, because sometimes I've kind of felt, not only am I coping with what's happening with me in the moment with my diagnosis, but I'm having to cope and understand where Jenny is coming from, or Matt is coming from, or a friend is coming from, you know, and their sort of inability to kind of like accept what I'm trying to accept. Does that make sense to people, you know?
I think it absolutely does, yeah. And I think just to echo what Graham said before, is we hope that is where we hope our friends and family training kind of bridges a little bit of a gap, because we can run it with the family member as well as the person who has sight loss, and work through the bits and pieces together. And it tries to just open up the communication to explain what both of you might be going through, as well as how to support each other. But yeah, I can completely imagine what you mean. There's empathy going both ways, and it's someone you love, and it's very difficult to understand when it's something that's a bit more difficult, isn't it? So I'm sorry that's your experience. I wish you all the best with it as well.
Danny, I'm conscious that we're in the last sort of 5 minutes of the presentation, so I'm going to say thank you very much on behalf of us all here at Devon Insight for your presentation today. I've really enjoyed that. I'll just share the main guide dog's telephone number again, and that was 0800 781 1454. 1444. So that number again, 0800 781 1444. All of this information, we have a recording that we will put on the website. We have the information in the office, so we can put you in touch with guide dogs if you'd like to find out more about the My Sighted Guide courses. Our next speaker event is going to be on the 13th of December, and we're going to be joined by Jenny Moon. And Jenny is a festive storyteller. So this is a bit different to our normal events, which tend to have a sight loss focus. So she tells stories to older adults in care homes and at lunch clubs. She's spoken at folk clubs, concerts and festivals, and at National Trust houses. She draws on a large collection of stories from all over the world and has written some as well. So that's going to be a very different sort of event next time. So that's at 10:30 on the 13th of December. For those of you who access Devon Insight services quite regularly, just a little bit of news about Tessa Barrett. Tessa is currently off work with COVID. She's been quite unwell. And it just reminds us that we all need to keep safe and look after each other. Keep up with your vaccinations. I had mine on Saturday. So, Danny, I just thank you. Really enjoyed that, and we look forward to you all joining us again on the 13th of December. Thank you very
Brilliant.
Much.
Thank you very much, Graham. Thanks,
thank
everyone.
You. Cheers. Oh, very interesting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having
thank
me.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.